This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. On this Thanksgiving Eve, chances are pretty good you're doing all that prep for tomorrow's big feast. And in doing so, you're following a tradition that dates back for hundreds of years. So if your great-great-grandma came for Thanksgiving dinner tomorrow at your house, would she feel at home with what you'd be serving? We're going to find out now as we turn to writer Bill Loomis, who's author of Detroit's Delectable Past, 2 centuries of Frog Legs, Pigeon Pie, and Drugstore Whiskey. Welcome. Good to have you back.
Thanks, Cindy.
So would great-great-grandma feel at home with our 2012 dinners?
You know, of all our holidays, I'm confident that she would. She might be a little bit amazed at the size of our turkeys, which are probably 3 times as big as hers were. But generally, it hasn't changed very much.
Well, we know Thanksgiving got its start in New England some 400 years ago, and then it became kind of that Puritan thing. They had the days of Thanksgiving and the days of fasting.
That's
how very English Reformation.
Yeah, exactly.
But here we were, French Detroit. So how did it make its way and when?
Yeah, the French in French Detroit, prior to the New Englanders coming to Detroit in the 1820s through the 1840s, they didn't have Thanksgiving. They had Christmas, of course, which New England didn't have, but they did have, but they didn't have Thanksgiving. So it was Lewis Cass who was originally from New Hampshire, who really pushed it through and made the first proclamation in 1824 to celebrate Thanksgiving.
Did it catch on pretty quickly? Was everybody in the mood for a good party?
It was slow. Prior to the Civil War, it was as much, if not more so, a religious holiday. So it was a day of kind of like the Sabbath, where people would take a day off work and relax and that sort of thing. But they did do turkey, and they did have relatives over, but it was a little bit slower, I think.
So would we in 2012 enjoy eating the turkey of French Detroit? I know you've dug up the quote. What is it, too much for one, not enough for two?
Yeah, that was the expression at some of the parties, because the turkeys were, you know, about 8 pounds. And if you think, if you go to Meijer's and you buy a chicken, it's about 5 pounds, you know. So it wasn't much bigger than that. So you can't feed a whole table load of people on 1 8-pound turkey.
None of these butterball behemoths.
No.
The
they didn't do that. They were usually wild turkeys. And wild turkeys are lean and mean, and they don't get real heavy.
So would the meat have tasted pretty much like what we expect?
Yeah, pretty much. But it was always described as a little gamier. But people liked that. You know, they liked wild game a lot, so that was preferred.
So if you would either have to do a lot more turkeys if you had a large family, or you'd start rounding your table out with other food.
That's what they did. That's exactly right.
So what kinds of things would we see served? Let's say it's 1859, it's Thanksgiving. What would we be having if we were in Michigan at Thanksgiving?
Well, if you had your family over, and it was tradition to bring your family over, you would have – the turkey was always talked about, but there would also be chickens. There might be ducks. Ducks were very commonly served. Wild game was very popular. So they might have venison. They might have fish, quail, even squirrel. And one Thanksgiving table had squirrel. There was much more variety. And they would serve traditionally pies, meat pies, things like that. So the table was full, and everybody had depending on how big the table was, how many people over, you'd have a bigger variety of things.
And the way they were cooking, was it in the hearth?
Yeah, it started in the hearth. The stoves didn't come around until a little after the Civil War. So people did the women did the cooking on the hearth. And they would, in the French days, they had a cord which they suspended the turkey from, and they would basically turn it and baste it. The other methods, they used a tin kitchen, which was a sort of a metal oven that you would push up against the fire, and the turkey would be inside that. But you had to put it on a spit, which wasn't easy. It had to be turned. So that was constant attention along with being basted.
Something that the younger child could stand and turn the turkey on the spit.
Yeah, that was somebody's job.
While mama was working.
Yeah, really, making 100 other things.
Well, when you mention wild game, Bill Loomis, you brought up something in some of your research that made me turn my head twice and go, what? What would they eat?
Right. A popular item for some big families was bear. They would have roast bear as part of the Thanksgiving dinner. And imagine the surprise on your family's face if you brought out a 300-pound roast bear for Thanksgiving. But it supposedly tasted like beef. Yeah, that was a big item.
What kind of shopping, how would they go shopping for that? I mean, we're all pretty used to going in and picking a pre-wrapped cold thing
frozen
out of
turkey.
Frozen, or it's a big deal to buy it fresh. But a little bit more close to the earth, wasn't it?
Yeah, they bought live turkeys. The turkeys were at the market. Mm-hmm. Usually, actually, they were in front of the market on the street. And you would go and basically check out. They had rules of thumb in the newspaper articles or in the magazines on how to pick a live bird and not get stuck with a bad bird. And you had to check the turkey's eyes and check its feet, and they would check all kinds of little tips on how to make sure the bird was freshly killed. It was important that it had to be freshly killed and that you got a plump bird that wasn't going to be bad for your family.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with writer Bill Loomis, who is really a food historian and has dug into the past in Michigan to find out what we might have been eating for Thanksgiving, our big feast, through the ages in Michigan. Now, you found out there was quite a love affair with oysters.
Oysters became really popular in the middle 19th century. The oyster companies just went crazy with marketing and shipping oysters. They would load wagons with oysters. They actually came up with a technique to ship oysters and keep them fresh. So they once they learned that, they could ship them all over the country, and they did. Before even trains, they were shipping these oysters to the point where people on the prairies would have oysters, baked oysters twice a week, and they'd never been within 1,000 miles at least of the ocean, but they had oysters.
Wow. So what kinds of ways would oysters show up on the Thanksgiving table?
The most popular way was either in the stuffing. Their oyster stuffing was really popular, and that was either chopped with mushrooms and other things or put in whole, or in something called oyster pie. And oyster pie was like, if you can imagine, a big chicken pot pie mm-hmm. with oysters, butter, and milk, and salt and pepper, and some spices, and a crust, and they would bake that. Later, in the 1860s and 70s, scalloped oysters were more popular because it was bigger even than that. So people just couldn't get enough of them.
We kind of that has waned, I think.
I know. Yeah, oysters on Thanksgiving. And oyster sauce was also popular, which was like a gravy, boiled oysters, and you'd pour it over your turkey. People had a lot more variety than we do, too, in the way they made turkey. Now we just basically roast it, mm-hmm. or I guess some people deep fry it.
Right.
But then boiled turkey was very popular. Yeah, I know.
I'm not feeling a lot of flavor. I'm not feeling
no,
butter.
No, it was really it wasn't really boiled. It was actually poached, but they called it boiled. Hmm. But they put it in a big kettle, and sometimes their stoves just wouldn't work well, or the fire wasn't right, or something that didn't lend itself to roasting. So you had to have a little more creativity. So they would boil it. Poach it, if you will, mm-hmm. with onions and celery and butter in the water. Cloves, sometimes they would add. And then oyster dressing and oyster stuffing was very popular with boiled turkey.
Well, there we go. Keep that one in mind.
Yeah, you want to put that on your
list.
What
about side dishes?
Side dishes were a lot of the same side dishes that we have now. They served squash, served onion dishes were popular.
Creamed onions or things like that?
Creamed onion, okay. Root vegetables, very popular. Turnips, they had things called turnip macaroni, which was basically turnips cut into thin strips and boiled. And pickles were very popular. In fact, also served with turkey, I want to mention that, tongue and ham was a popular side dish with turkey.
How very deli of them.
I know.
But you know what? If that goes back, and I know just based on having had a Christmas dinner in Ireland, spiced beef,
mm-hmm.
which I've never seen over here ever, but it was very, very cloves and
mm-hmm.
cinnamon.
Right,
spiced
right.
beef would be part of mm-hmm. the turkey, and it would be, in Ireland, it was potato stuffing. My mother-in-law's potato stuffing.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
But I just wonder if some of that came.
Well, yeah, we had mince pies, which is basically chopped up meat spiced with, just like you say, clove, cinnamon, all kinds of things. In Detroit, they had a traditional mince pie called a tortilla. That was basically a mince pie with a crust on top.
Now, in all of your research, you dug up a story from a Detroit newspaper from woman's writer Marion Hale.
Oh, yeah.
Who described what... So she was the Martha Stewart of her
mm-hmm.
day, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
The ideal Thanksgiving dinner for the 1850s. So, and when I read that, we think we overeat?
Right. I mean, it was amazing how much food they put out back then. It was just beef and mutton and ducks and all this on this on these tables, just huge. And that was the idealized. She was a very famous person actually during her day, and she was a leading editor of her day. So she was really like a Martha Stewart. Mm-hmm. She just recommended just. It was just a huge feast, kind of like a Roman feast almost.
So it would run for several hours?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It would go 4 hours. And you just keep eating and bringing out more stuff. And it was quite a scene.
And what would be served to drink with the big feast?
They served wine. You know, they would have wine and beer, cider, nothing very alcoholic. Mm. That was really considered a Protestant sort of a... You know, that still clung to it. So there wasn't a lot of imbibing.
And it did seem from your notes, she mm-hmm. wanted a well-set table. So that was as important
right.
then as it is today?
Yes, absolutely. Women took great pride in having an absolutely stark white tablecloth. And the men were also – it was considered an honor to have for the husband to have a big family all around. So you invited your parents and the relatives and everybody came. And so imagine how much time it took to prepare for something like that. So stains weren't easily gotten out of cloth, and somebody's always spilling plum wine or tar or something on your beautiful cloth. And so it was a lot of work.
Well, just thinking of the logistics of preparing all that food, and even if your sister-in-law brought the roast bear, you
really?
Still had a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
Without all of the amenities that we just take for granted, like throw it in the freezer mm-hmm. or pre-make mm-hmm. it and then bring it to, to reheat it.
Well, it was a big deal, and all done on a fireplace, not to forget. So, yeah.
So for those of us who are kind of moaning a little bit about what we have to do, be grateful might we have a double oven or we have the range tops and we have our refrigerators. And
right. One thing I didn't see is mashed potatoes. Very few potatoes. You said in Ireland they had them. They did stuff ducks with potatoes, but you don't see mashed potatoes as a big thing.
But sweet potatoes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sweet potatoes,
that was
definitely.
Big.
Yeah.
So it does sound pretty much like we would be able to step back or they could come mm-hmm. up and join us and
we'd
all get along. What are you having for your Thanksgiving dinner?
We're having bear. Yeah, no, I think we'll probably have turkey, roast turkey, not boiled.
Bill, a lot of fun, as always, talking with you. Bill Loomis, who is the author of Detroit's Delectable Past, 2 centuries of frog legs, pigeon pie, and drugstore whiskey. Thanks for talking with us today.
Thanks, Cindy.